Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the hour. Jim Blasingame. Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. Broadcasting live from New York City and having a great time. I want to introduce you to a new friend, ladies and gentlemen. And John Quelch is our new friend, hopefully soon to be old friend. He's got a lot to tell us, a lot to teach us. I already know that because of what I've seen in the work that he's done. John is, in addition to being Senior Associate Dean of the School of Business at Harvard, he's also the co-author of Greater Good, How Good Marketing Makes for Better Marketing. And I need to mention that his co-author, his name is Catherine Joss. And I'll get him to help me with that pronunciation in a second. Let's get him in here. John Quelch, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Jim. It's a pleasure.
It's good to have you here. Can you help pronounce Catherine's last name?
It's Joss, in fact, not Joss.
Joss, okay. But folks, that's spelled J-O-C-Z. You can be sure to tell her we didn't forget about her, John.
That's for sure. I'm sure she's listening, Jim.
Well, we always make sure we give all the attribution where it's deserved. And John, your subtitle of your book, the book's titled Greater Good, folks, and so many of the things that John and Catherine talk about in this book, are things that you and I have talked about, but I didn't say well, probably over the years. But you make this connection about how good marketing makes for better democracy. Now, what's marketing and democracy have to do with each other?
Well, Jim, it's pretty simple. Every day in the commercial marketplace, there are billions and billions of transactions that take place between one consumer and another, or one consumer and a retailer, and so forth. And when you put all of these exchanges together, what you have is a social glue that comes out of trust that's built up in the commercial marketplace that really does a lot to reinforce our ability to function properly in the political marketplace. And this contribution of economic freedom and the commercial market to the smooth functioning of political discourse and political dialogue has long been neglected and overlooked. We say in our book that what consumers expect from their marketers is not at all that different from what citizens expect from their governments.
Are you saying, is part of what you're saying that what consumers now want and expect might not be in their best democratic interests? Is any of what you're saying that?
Well, we believe very much in the notion that consumers are and should be in control of the choices that they make. But it goes without saying that as more and more of those choices that we have to make are on very, very complicated matters that previously we didn't have to deal with, for instance, deciding what health care plan to choose, that we need some sort of government or industry parameters to enable us to better make those choices and make choices from among a selection of options that have been, as it were, approved as being appropriate and legitimate.
One of the things that I've been talking about for a long time, John, is the concept of manipulation. In the 20th century, marketing and advertising was very heavy in the area of manipulation, and partially because we were introducing things that nobody'd ever had before. So people had to be educated. It was kind of an understandable thing that people would say, you know, would try to manipulate people, and were able to manipulate people with marketing and advertising. I think that in the 21st century is the wrong you think.
Well, one of the interesting things about manipulation is this, Jim. If I ask you, does advertising manipulate people, you will say yes. But if I asked you, when was the last time you were personally manipulated by advertising, believe me, the number of people agreeing with that goes down from about 95% first question to 3% on that question.
Right.
So
right.
We've got to be a little bit cautious about overdoing the big brother thing here. Most consumers are pretty savvy people. Obviously, as you correctly say, there are some new products, new services that come to market that do require us to self-educate or be educated or be helped towards making intelligent decisions, especially if those are very expensive choices like which college to go to or which health plan to buy. Those are things that can't easily be rolled back once you've decided them.
Well, exactly. Well, you know, the think of a small business owner. This is one of the things that I've been I talk to big companies about all the time. When I think of a small business owner, they actually, a lot of times people don't, companies don't understand that small business owners are consumers, and you, and when you speak to them as a consumer, you might be able to manipulate them. You might be able to move them in one direction as a consumer to buy an iPod or a pair of shoes or something like that. But when they put their small business hat on, you can't manipulate them. They're very, very educated, very driven, you know, very focused acquirers of products and services. And so you can't manipulate them. And I think sometimes large companies miss the boat on that. Do you agree with that or not?
Well, I think certainly that there are a lot of small business owners, and I'm one of them myself, who have a lot of fun in our day-to-day personal shopping behavior. But when it comes to running that business, especially if we've got, you know, one or two or three other families who are dependent upon our decisions for whether or not they go to sleep well at night, then it's very important, obviously, to put the thinking cap on really hard and to make sound and savvy business decisions that aren't swayed by emotion. But I would say in addition that there are a lot of companies that recognize as suppliers to small business that the small and medium-sized companies are the engine of growth in this economy and
yep.
will remain that despite the current economic hardships we're going through, and they focus their marketing efforts very intensely on, I think, addressing the specific needs of small and medium-sized businesses. I remember, for example, a couple of years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, the IBM Solutions for an Emerging Planet campaign.
Hold on to that thought, John. I need to take a quick break, folks. We're going to be right back with John Quayle talking about marketing and democracy. And your small business. It's 20 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassie, and the book is called Greater Good. Stay with us.
Fantabulous night to make romance. Need the cover of October skies. Get all the leaves on the trees are falling to
we're back.
The sound of the
3 after the hour. Little Van Morrison bringing us back. I'm Jim Blassingame, a small business advocate, and we're visiting, having a great visit with our new friend, John Quelch. He is a senior associate dean at the School of Business at Harvard. He is also, along with Catherine Jose, the author of Greater Good, How Good Marketing Makes for a Better Democracy. John, do you remember you were giving us an example of a marketing and a marketing example when we went to the break? Did you finish that, or do you remember what it was?
Yeah, I finished it, Jim, and I think that the key point that comes out of that is the notion of marketing as a long-term investment, that when we build relationships with individuals in our lives, it's just like building customer relationships as a small business. You want to build those relationships over and for the long term. And a lot of what's wrong in our economy in the last 10 years has been a function of the short-termism of the Wall Street financial crowd basically demanding companies behave on a three-month cycle as opposed to building business for the long term.
How many times have you heard me say that on this show, ladies and gentlemen? John, thank you for saying that, because this is what I've been saying for a long time, is that the corporate fealty to quarterly guidance to the analysts, I think, is one of the biggest dangers to our marketplace and to quality and to giving a company, allowing a company, helping a company seek excellence. I think it's one of the biggest impediments, one of the biggest dangers that we have. And let me give you two quick examples. 2 years ago, I think it was, Google made more money in a quarter than any company in history, percentage-wise, than any company in history. It was an incredible when they announced that. But their numbers were one less than the analysts said that they were going to make, one penny, and the stock down that day. Now, how much sense does that make? And here's another quick one. This company, a retail company I know, they did a survey and they determined that no one could tell, or 65% of the people who left any one of their business or their competitor's business couldn't tell the person on the outside whose store they had just been in. They were so much alike, and so they realized that they needed to do something so they could differentiate themselves from their competitors. You know what they did? Did they change the store look? Did they come up with some kind of a service campaign or anything like that? No. You know what they did? They changed their brand promise. That's it.
The brand promise, Jim, is absolutely critical. I was just going to say it's so important in a cluttered market to really understand what you stand for, particularly when you're a small business.
John, let me point something out here.
Yeah.
They didn't deliver on the promise. They just changed what they said.
Ah, okay.
That's my point. See, and they put out a press release and actually told people how many more people preferred this new brand promise that they were saying.
Right.
That was their answer to why we're, how do we differentiate ourselves?
Well, you know what, Jim, a brand promise doesn't mean anything unless the promise is delivered.
Exactly.
And every small business person I know understands that they don't get any credit for making a promise. They get credit for delivering on what they say they're going to do.
Right, right. Exactly. Let's talk about small businesses, because we can't do anything about the big guys. I'm the analyst, we can't do anything about that. But what can small business owners do about this? About marketing?
I think that as we all know, the American economy is driven in terms of job growth on the back of small and medium-sized businesses, and therefore their importance is acknowledged and understood. The marketplace is extremely competitive. I think that anyone going into a small business should think about, first and foremost, what are they going to deliver in terms of added value to the customer, not in terms of whether or not it's going to be more fun for them to be doing things for themselves rather than working for somebody else, but what are they going to do that is going to add value to a customer and make a customer want to switch to them from the existing supplier. A lot of people in small business don't have a relentless focus on the customer. That is what you need to do. The second thing that's related to that, I think, is once you know which customer you're going to serve and what the value is that you're going to deliver to the customer, to relentlessly respect the customer. That doesn't mean, of course, saying yes when someone who's a bad customer is trying to defraud you, but what it does mean is going the extra mile. And I can tell you, in a recession, you know, the small businesses that are going to survive are the ones that have gone the extra mile on behalf of customers, and those customers are going to try and do everything they can to look after those suppliers. What one quote I'll just give you that I recall.
John, hold on to that quote. We're going to take a quick break.
Alrighty.
John, stay with us in the next segment. John, give us your blog address, please.
It's www.quelchblog.com.
That's Quelch.
Blog.com. Yeah.
Like Quelch. Like squelch, but it's just with a Q.
That's right. You can imagine the childhood I had.
Well, how about with somebody with a name like Blassingame? Can you imagine that? We're going to take a quick break.
That's pretty tough, Jim.
I think I've got a lot of fights over that one, boy. We're going to take a quick one, folks. We'll be right back with John Quelch, our new friend. We're going to talk more about marketing your small business in a recession. How about that? Stay with us.
Talkers Magazine calls Jim Blasingame one of the best talk show hosts in the industry.
Now remember, I do my best work when I'm being worshipped as a god.
He's Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate.
Welcome back. 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. My website, the smallbusinessadvocate.com. That's the mothership. And then askjim.biz, that's our knowledge base. That's where you get small business answers now. And then, of course, our blog, which I'm posting usually 4 blog posts a day. Sometimes yesterday, being in New York, I was pretty busy, so I only got 2 of them up there, but we got more to come. But I'm trying to get about 4 a day, and so check those out when you get a chance. And that's at jimsblog.biz. But also, as I say, if you go to the mothership, smallbusinessadvocate.com, you can find the blog and Ask Jim, so I hope you'll check those out. John Quelch is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. He's our soon-to-be old friend, senior associate dean at the Harvard School of Business. He and Catherine Jost have written a book called Greater Good: How Good Marketing Makes for Better Democracy. And we're going to have a lot more business in the future. I'm going to explore that thought a little bit more. But John, you were talking about marketers being more respectful to their employee, to their customers. Finish your thought on that.
Well, I just remember, Jim, a great story that relates to the founders of Snapple, the beverage company. Snapple was founded by a couple of New York window washers and a guy who ran a natural food store in New York. And after they'd done very well and sold out for, I think it was around about $170 million, One of them, not to Coca-Cola. It was initially to a private venture capital company. Then it went to Quaker, and then it went back to Triarc that manufactures RC Cola, and now it's with Cadbury. Be that as it may, the important point is that in a TV interview with one of the founders of the company, there was one quote from this fellow that really stood out and I think is extremely relevant to small business owners today. When asked to explain why they had succeeded and so many other companies in the new age beverage category had not, what he said was this. He said, well, you know, he said, we never thought of ourselves as any better than our customers. And I think that is a wonderful quote that in my mind kind of captures the essential respect that you have to have for the customer in order to develop a really true relationship with them that's going to stand you in good stead when things get tough as they are now.
John, I want you to say that again. Folks, this is going to be on the test. Go ahead. John, say their philosophy.
We never thought of ourselves as any better than our customers.
Wow. How many times have you walked into a business and you got the feeling that they thought they were royalty and you were one of the peasants?
Well, I tell you another example similar to that, which is even more amusing, and that is I went into an auto body shop in one of the rougher neighborhoods of Boston after I got into a little problem with my car on a parking lot to get a quote on getting it fixed. And I went up to the counter, and there was this very, very large guy, heavily tattooed behind the counter, waiting to serve me, if I can put it that way. And behind him was a notice on the wall. And this notice said, and I quote, "We screw the other guy and pass the savings on to you." And so I looked at this guy and looked at the notice on the wall, and then being about half his size, I plaintively said to him, "For this purpose, am I the other guy?" That is not a recommended approach to enhancing confidence on the part of the customer in the service that you're going to deliver.
John, I got 1 minute left before I have to let you go. Give us your last thoughts on one good tip on marketing in a difficult economy.
Well, I think the key is don't panic. Obviously, things are going to get tough. Obviously, you're not going to be able to spend all that money on that advertising campaign that you thought you were going to be able to spend. But think about who are your top 20 customers, and think think about what you can do to re-recruit those customers every day. So when you go into work this morning, you're thinking, I've got those top 20 customers. I've got to do something today that's going to help me get their business tomorrow. Even though I know they're strapped, they don't have the money to pay all of their suppliers, but I'm going to make sure I'm one of those suppliers that they hang on to.
Well said, John. Give us the website one more time, the blog site one more time, please.
It's www.quelchblog.com. And I sure appreciate the opportunity, Jim, and thanks for all you're doing for small business.
Thank you, John. Will you come back another day? I've enjoyed having you here.
Of course, my pleasure.
Yeah, thanks. John Quelch, ladies and gentlemen, the book is called Greater Good, How Good Marketing Makes for a Better Democracy. I recommend it, and that's QUELCH.com. Quick break. Stay with me. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.